A Radiance in the Gulag by Njola Sedunlete. Chapter 9. The Women in the Camp. There are many old women, as well as sick women here, so I am glad I was brought here according to my calling, to nurse and to love. And even though I miss you all very much, it will be difficult to leave here. I will be sorry to leave people who have become very close and dear to me, but then the good God cares best for us. From the Chronicle, number 23, June 13, 1976. The eldest woman in the Mordova concentration camp was Tatyana Karpovna Kasnova, born in 1904. We used to call her Baba Tanya, or Grandmother Tanya. A thin, petite, little Orthodox woman, Baba Tanya was completely illiterate, able neither to read nor write. How did she frighten Soviet government officials so badly that they sentenced her to 7 years in the concentration camp and 3 years of exile as an especially dangerous criminal? Her whole offense, like that of 9 other Russian Orthodox women confined in the concentration camp, consisted of placing in people's mailboxes hand-copied verse, condemning the government's atheists' ridicule and persecution of believers. In other words, she libeled the Soviet government. Because Soviet officials oppose everything which is sacred to the believer, the woman openly used to call the Soviet government the Satanic government, Sataninskaya Vlast. Baba Tanya was particularly noted for her cleanliness, and like the other Orthodox women, she used to pray all day. They used to condemn the Orthodox hierarchy's criminal concessions to the government atheists and their cooperation with them, betraying the concerns of the faithful. Calling themselves the true Orthodox, the women used to keep a strict fast, abstaining completely from meats and animal fats, hence they usually ate only bread. Our porridge or soup often had a piece of scorched bacon or bacon bits thrown in it, so they would not eat such food, even though it contained barely enough fat for seasoning. We used to request the concentration camp administration not to have cooks put the bacon bits or fat in the kashka or soup being prepared for us, because the little Orthodox were forced to starve and we ourselves often suffered food poisoning from the rancid fat. They would reply, "If you don't like it, don't eat it. You haven't come to a spa, you know." And they continued to prepare it, as before. When on May 1st, May Day, or November 7th, anniversary of the revolution, the devil's holidays, as the Orthodox women called them, they used to bring us a small roll as a supplement, not one Orthodox woman would take it. We began protesting against keeping such a woman as Baba Tanya in a strict labor camp. Never in the history of mankind has it been heard that a 74-year-old illiterate grandmother could be especially dangerous to the state. Some sort of commission showed up and summoned Baba Tanya for an interview, but she told them that she did not need any favors from the representatives of the Satanic government. They left her in the concentration camp until 1979, when they sent the 75-year-old Tanya into exile. The female prisoners in the transport took everything from her, her meager food reserves, clothing, and even her little padded jacket. It was the end of October or the beginning of November, cold and damp. The difficult journey, lasting almost a month through various prisons, hunger and cold drained her completely of the last remnants of her poor health, and after she was brought to the steppes of Kazakhstan, among complete strangers, on November 23rd, 1979, she surrendered her soul to the Lord. May she rest in Him. Baba Tanya had my address with her when I was still in exile in Siberia, and a good-hearted woman, at her request, wrote me a letter in which she informed me that they had delivered Baba Tanya in seriously ill condition, and that shortly after her arrival, on November 23, 1979, she had died. The militia immediately claimed her remains and took them no one knows where. Baba Tanya died far from friends and relatives. Her burial place is a mystery, but the sacrifice of her life has meaning. The deaths of martyrs are the brightest stars in the darkness of this life. A blessing in the church militant. Earlier, Baba Tanya had been in prison 3 years for her religion under terrible conditions. They had kept her in a tightly packed cell without letting her out for exercise. All the women lay on a dirty cement floor, and used to receive a piece of bread and some water once a day. A second Orthodox martyr was Irania Andreevna Kirivna, born 1912, who died in the concentration camp on May 26, 1980. Baba Ire, as we called her, was very kind and sensitive, always ready to help comfort the other women. She suffered from terminal cancer. For almost 6 months before her death, they kept her in the concentration camp hospital, where she became completely exhausted, but they would not let her go home. All of the female criminals, however, when they are incurable, are allowed to go home. Baba Ira departed this life in the concentration camp, and her gravesite also will never be known. They bury the remains of political prisoners secretly, tying on the hand the criminal case number, which they write on a stake marking the burial place. There is no name, just the case number. The only ones allowed in those cemeteries are officials, Czechists. I was given the information by some of the soldiers who themselves had experienced much injustice and cruelty in the army, and who began to show us sympathy and even respect. Even though they used to be told that we were the worst kind of offenders, they wondered at the injustice, saying that the best people were locked up in the concentration camp, and the greatest criminals and moral perverts were in the commandant's jobs. This really is so. Another Orthodox prisoner, Alexandra Akimnova Chlatkova, born 1906, was also very ill. Sentenced for the second time on account of her religion, she had spent much time in the punishment cell because, like all the Orthodox women, she would do no forced labor in the concentration camp in protest against her unjust sentence. The long agonies, the cold and hunger had undermined her strength. All her limbs ached, and often her head. She had high blood pressure and was very pale and exhausted, suffering from cold constantly. With some other older women, she made quilts from old padded jackets which the guards quickly took away and burned. "Let them freeze, let them suffer. They didn't come to a resort," they taunted, as usual. For covering, they used to give everyone a single thin cotton blanket, like a thick sheet. We were all cold, for the nights in Moldova are cool even in summer. In the fall and spring, besides, it is damp, and in winter there is the cold. However, they used to put up with all the sufferings very patiently, saying, "The harder, the better." At the end of 1982, they transported Baba Yurna Tvartkova to exile in Kazakhstan. I received no letter from her, since by that time I was in Vilnius, and almost all my letters were confiscated by the KGB. Others wrote of her, and to this day I do not have her address. May the good God help her, and all not to give up in their love. A fourth Orthodox prisoner, Klavida Grigorievna Volkova, was born in 1907. Baba Klava was very quiet and good. I slept in the bunk above her. The beds were double-decker, made of iron and very uncomfortable. When one rolled over, not only the upper bunk moved, but also the lower one, into which the upper is set, and conversely, when the prisoner in the lower bunk rolled over, the upper moved, awakening one constantly. Baba Klava never used to complain when, suffocating at the ceiling for lack of air, I would flop around like a fish tossed ashore. She used to devote much time to fervent prayer. Sometimes all the Orthodox women, gathered in some out-of-the-way corner, would quietly begin singing hymns. Once I learned them, I used to join in. I would feel as though I were in some shrine. Such goodness and light would my soul experience. Not without reason, it is said that prayer in common reaches heaven. For several to pray together in the concentration camp is forbidden. The guards would often disperse us. But we would gather again and again to praise and thank God for his love for us sinners. Common prayer. That used to be one of the brightest and happiest times in the camp. Only a year younger was yet another Orthodox prisoner, Anastasia Andreevna Volkova, who was born in 1908. The two Volkovas were not related, but both were sentenced together. Baba Nastya was a sick woman, with bad hands and feet, but very industrious. She was a good seamstress. Since neither Volkovna had been sentenced to exile, when they came out of the concentration camp, they were both welcomed by good people in the city of Gorky. However, the most humane Soviet government did not leave these sick women in peace, and they were forced to go elsewhere. A sixth Orthodox prisoner was Glafira Lavrentyevna Kulevsheva, born in 1924, When they arrested her, she left behind young daughters and a husband who was a party member. He tempted her, saying that if she renounced her views, she would be released. She would not cave in. Then her husband renounced her, would not visit her, and refused to help her, but instead found himself another woman. Glafira forgave everyone. She used to pray constantly, in tears, and she was very humble. She suffered from inflammation of the joints, polyarthritis. Even though she suffered greatly, she never complained, but would smile constantly and thank God for everything. After concentration camp, she suffered exile in Siberia for 3 years, and has now returned to her mother. Among the youngest prisoners was a woman in her 40s, Tatyana Mikhailovna Sokolova. Born in 1933, she was very quiet and friendly, yet suffered from diabetes, gastric disorders, and massive headaches. In spite of her very poor health, however, and because she refused to perform compulsory labor, she was constantly tormented in the punishment cells in the prison. When they would take her away to prison for 3 or 6 months, she would leave me her lower bunk. Now she has returned to her family. The other Orthodox prisoners were Ekaterina Petrovna Alyoshina. Born in 1912, gentle and quiet, always smiling. She was very good at repairing footwear for all the female prisoners. She used to wait on the sick. She prayed fervently. She has since returned to her people. Maria Pavlovka Semyonova, born in 1923. She had been sentenced for the third time for the same anti-Soviet activity. In prison for over 20 years, she had been tormented for many years in the punishment cells. Gentle and quiet, she used to care for the pigeons, feeding them underbaked bread leftovers. She had artistic talent and used to make beautiful collages. She prayed much. In 1982, together with Baba Yura Tvatkova, she was transported to exile in Kazakhstan. Nadezhda Mikhailovna Usayeva, in her 30s, born in 1942, the youngest of the Orthodox women, she had been sentenced for the same reason as the others, the dissemination of poems, to 6 years of camp and 3 years of exile. Like all the Orthodox women in the concentration camp, she refused, as a symbol of protest, to perform compulsory labor, and for that she was tormented in the isolation cell in prison for a whole 6 years. They would bring her to the concentration camp for just a few days or weeks and take her away again to torment her with hunger and cold. I recall a description of Nadia I wrote in a letter during this time. Nadia Usayeva is a girl of remarkable goodness and tact, sentenced to 6 years of strict regime labor and 2 years of exile. She is a very decent and high-minded Russian Orthodox. We are like sisters, only, unfortunately, she was hardly ever permitted to take a vacation at the labor camp. It's a real miracle. Where does that fragile girl get her strength? 5 years of punishment camp and strict regime prison with hardly a break, starvation, cold, and ridicule. She's a true heroine, before whom one should even kneel. Quiet, calm, always smiling, with a prayer on her lips. I never heard her utter an impatient or rough word. She goes to the punishment cell smiling and returns, smiling, exhausted, blue with cold. She looks terrible, but smiles, not only at us, but at her tormentors as well. Her example moved and still moves me to tears. From the Chronicle, number 41, January 1st, 1980. This last Nadia gives an opportunity to describe the prison where those of us in camp were punished. She was completely exhausted, her gray, blotched skin stretched over her skeleton. She was always calm and joyful, spending hours on end, secluded from others in the corner, in fervent prayer. And when, after a few days of rest, the warden would come again to announce with sadistic satisfaction that Nadia was being taken off to the punishment cell that day, she would quietly get ready with a pleasant smile. The warden who would accompany her out of the concentration camp to renewed torment. Only the good God could give a person superhuman strength and love for one's tormentors. The punishment cell is a small, low cement cubicle in the basement, very damp and cold, almost unheated in winter. The temperature is just a few degrees above 0 centigrade, with a little window near the ceiling. Locking the prisoner up in the punishment cell, they take away all clothing, except for underwear. Women are left with just a light striped summer weight dress. Usually they lock you up for 15 days. Without taking you out of the punishment cell once, there's an iron pot for nature's needs, and a small stool and a little table cemented to the floor. And those are the amenities. to the damp, cold exterior wall, which, during the winter, is covered with frost, is attached a bare board, half a span wide, the prison cot, which at 6 a.m. is secured with chains and locks to the wall, so that the prisoner will not be able to lie down during the day, and at 10 p.m. is unchained and lowered for rest. In order to not roll off that narrow plank, the prisoner is forced to keep his back pressed against the cold, damp wall. The starving, thinly clad prisoner usually cannot sleep for 3 or 4 days on account of the cold. After a while, he becomes semi-conscious. Every other day, they give the prisoner a slice of bread, cold water, and some salt. On alternate days, they offer a dipper of thin soup, balanda. And so, every other day, the prisoner receives a dipper of tepid liquid. In the punishment cell, one is not given any reading or writing material. Besides the loneliness, cold, and hunger, there are searches, vulgar ridicule, and cruelty. Many criminals, unable to bear these torments, commit suicide. This is how the sick, old Orthodox women were tormented for years on end, simply because they refused to perform compulsory labor until they were completely drained of strength and admitted to the invalid section, where they did not have to work, but the torment of illness without remedies or serious medical care continued. Prisoners in punishment cells were penalized for the slightest infraction, e.g. being too slow to stand and salute a passing guard. When they want to punish you, they can easily find a reason for it. They even lock up in the punishment cell sick women who are unable to perform their compulsory work norm on account of their weakness. And what is the regular prison cell like? Here things are a little better than in the punishment cell, because at night they give you a little blanket for covering, and they do not strip you to your undergarments, but neither do they give you any warm clothing. Daily the prisoner receives a few spoonfuls of kasha, a warm cup of water, and a dipper of soup, balanda. The food is worse even than in the concentration camp, and besides, one is locked up the whole time in the cell without air or sunlight, in a concrete coffin. With the help of God, Nadia and all the little Orthodox women withstood these torments without their spirits being broken. After all these tortures, they took Nadia away for 3 years to Siberia. In Atlay, she also suffered greatly, but now she has returned home. She returned with her health broken, but not her indomitable spirit. When I recall such spiritual giants as the pleasant little brunette Nadia Ozieva, I am reminded of the words from the Gospel. If God is for us, who can be against us? It is possible for one who is deeply rooted in God and lives by love to bear all things. Love is unconquerable. In 1975, the concentration camp also held 6 Ukrainian women. One of them, Nina Strokotova, was transported to the prison when I was brought to the concentration camp, and from there they released her without bringing her back to camp so that she could not meet the other prisoners and learn any news that she might carry out with her. Therefore, I never saw her, but she is now with her husband abroad and can tell more than I about herself and her fellow Ukrainian political prisoners. Another of the Ukrainians, Nadia Alexeyevna Svetlichnya, born in 1936, served 4 years before returning home, and after much trouble also emigrated. Nadia is a good-hearted woman who has suffered much because when they arrested her, she left behind her infant son, not quite a year old, whom the Czechists did not turn over to Nadia's relatives for a long time, threatening to leave him permanently in the children's home. It is difficult to imagine what the mother's loving heart suffered. Nonetheless, in the concentration camp, Nadia was very polite, quiet, and helpful, and, like all Ukrainian women, she always used to join actively in hunger strikes and other protests on behalf of the persecuted political prisoners. I am very grateful to her for her cordiality and for all her help while I was in the concentration camp. Afterwards, when I returned to freedom, she supported me morally from Siberia. May the Almighty God reward with his generous blessings her and all people who do good. A third Ukrainian, Oksana Zenonovna Popovich, born in 1926, had been sentenced for the second time. The first time, she had not been quite 20 years old. Unable to stand the torment, she tried to escape and was shot in the abdomen and hip. Miraculously, she survived. They sentenced her to 10 years in the concentration camp in exile for an undetermined period. After all her sufferings having gone through the hell of the gulag, Oksana returned to the Ukraine physically an invalid, but spiritually unbroken. They put her in a hospital for an operation on her wounded leg, and from there, the Czechists seized her directly to be tried again and sent away for 7 years of concentration camp and 5 years of exile. Her only offense was her love for the Ukraine and the truth, and her refusal to become a slave of the occupants. Oksana is very honest. She tells everyone the truth to their face, and this used to displease many. She could not stand any compromise with evil. In the concentration camp, she used to get around on crutches. Her wounded leg, which refused to heal, was very painful. She suffered from high blood pressure, 250 over 140 and higher. She was bothered by exhaustion and all sorts of ailments, but she was very sensitive to the sufferings of others. Presently, she is in exile in the province of Tumko, where she was transported at the end of 1982. Irina Mikhailovna Sienik, born in 1926, was another Ukrainian woman serving her second term. The first time she was sentenced, like Oksana, when she was not quite 20, to 10 years of concentration camp and exile for an undetermined period. During interrogation, they tortured her, burning her, breaking her bones, and beating her. Even though young Irina was just a student, not guilty of anything. Her father had been a military officer, so the occupants, having tortured him to death, tormented his whole family. What Irina and thousands of the best people suffered has been described in the Gulag Archipelago. After all her torments, she returned to the Ukraine. During a search, they found among her things a few poems written while she was still in the concentration camp, in which she described her own sufferings and those of others. For this, they gave her an additional 6 years of concentration camp and 5 years of exile. She has just ended her exile and returned to the Ukraine. Where she will be able to find a place is not clear. May the good God help her. Her father was tortured and shot by the Soviets. Her mother was exiled, tormented in the concentration camp, and died far from her homeland. Her 13-year-old brother, Roman, was tormented for not repudiating his father, and presently he is far from home. These days, the Czechists have begun to throw their weight around more than usual, and if Irina is not registered in the Ukraine, she may have to join her brother. Passport offices have received secret instructions not to register political prisoners who have been rehabilitated. In this way, an effort is made to intimidate everyone, to subjugate even those most courageous to falsehood, or to destroy physically those who remain loyal to the truth and sensitive to the sufferings of others. All of you should be shot, the Czechists tell the political prisoners to their faces, having given free rein to their hatred, while their chief, Andropov, ruled the Soviet Empire. I met a fifth Ukrainian woman, Stefania Mikhailovna Shabatura, during our transport to the concentration camp. Stefania is an artist born in 1938 who had completed higher studies. Completely gray and exhausted, she was tormented in the punishment cell and in the solitary confinement cell of the hard labor prison for almost a year, with brief breaks, just for demonstrating. She had refused to do hard labor because the administration of the concentration camp at the instigation of the KGB had confiscated and burned her pencil sketches drawn in her free time. Soviet officials fear not only words of truth and lines of poetry, but also innocent sketches. Everywhere they see danger for themselves, confiscate everything from the prisoners, and burn it. After her return to Lvov, where they would not register her for her own cooperative apartment, obtained with her own money, in which her sick mother lived, after long trials, KGB intimidators and threats to jail her again for not conforming to passport regulations, they refused to register for that, and then they threatened to punish her. Stefa was finally registered for 1 year, and she obtained employment. The sixth Ukrainian woman, Irina Onufrievna Kalinyak, born in 1940, used to write poetry, intelligent and active in the concentration camp. After exile, which she spent together with her husband, poet Igor Kalinek, she returned to Lvov to her parents and daughter. During my stay in the concentration camp, I found one fellow Lithuanian, Veronika Kodienė, born in 1916, a total invalid whose nervous system was completely ruined. The KGB took her from the neurological section of the hospital and sentenced her to 10 years of concentration camp because, during the post-war years, in her home, a Strabis, a Soviet killer, was shot. And she did not report it, but buried him secretly. If she had reported it at the time, they would have burned not only her, but the whole village with all its buildings. The scourge of the Soviet killers is well known to everyone. Now she has returned to her relatives. I do not know what has happened to her since. There is also a Russian woman, Galania Vladimirovna Sivilunchik, born in 1937. She had married a Belarusian, and together with her brother, 11 years younger than she, had tried to leave the country. They shot her husband, beat her and her brother unmercifully, knocking out her teeth, and after that, kept her in the KGB prison and put her on trial. Their father, who had abandoned them as infants along with her mother, had found himself another woman and refused to support them. Their mother, distressed, soon died. During the trial, he demanded the death penalty for his own children. He is a member of the Revered Party. The court, however, sentenced Galinya to 13 years of concentration camp and 5 years of exile, and her brother, Yuri Vladimirovich, to 11 years of concentration camp and 3 years of exile. Do not flee from the Soviet paradise. In the concentration camp, Galina was quiet and would not join in protests and hunger strikes. When I arrived, she had already been in 10 years. At present, she is in exile. I also found in camp two KGB informers, the Ukrainian Jewess Natalia Frantserna Grenwald and the Jewess Anna Kogan. Grenwald had worked for the Gestapo and betrayed many people and killed them. For that, she received 25 years of concentration camp. But in the concentration camp, she worked zealously for the Red Gestapo, the KGB. She betrayed prisoners, libeled them, spied, and planted false information. She did their dirty work, and for that she received, as recompense, all sorts of privileges. Supplementary parcels, patients' food, medical treatments, vitamins, etc. Grenwald was an elderly woman, over 60 years of age, with very malevolent eyes, which astonished me as soon as I saw her. Not without reason, it is said that the eyes are the window of the soul. Accidentally, I myself heard how Grenwald, toadying to the Czechists, offered to testify that any of the political prisoners was emotionally unbalanced. May God be merciful to her. At present, after finishing her 25-year sentence, she lives in a home for the elderly, rejoicing that they feed her well. Anna Kogan was transported to our camp from a criminal zone for purposes of spying. She and Grenwald used to keep an eye on us, who was friendly with whom, what we talked about, who organized strikes and the writing of protests and petitions. She also interfered with our attempts to establish contact with other concentration camps. She used to hang on the Czechists' apron strings. When they used to demand that we tell them how we found out what was going on in the other concentration camps, we would reply, "We have found this underground telephone." Before I even came to the concentration camp, a young Russian mother of two, Ronya Yanova, had been sentenced together with some Orthodox women. When the Czechists could not rehabilitate her, two of them, with the help of Grenwald and Kogan, drafted a statement declaring that Ronya was emotionally disturbed. They shut the completely healthy, calm, and good-hearted Ronya Yanova up in a psychiatric hospital in Kazan, where, after a year unable to stand the torments, she died. May she rest in the Lord. She is one more martyr for the faith and for the love of God. The concentration camp physician had said, "If Yanova is a mental case, then we are all three times crazier than she is." But the KGB later hounded that doctor from his position. Meanwhile, the poor KGB informers, Grenwald and Kogan, took advantage of all kinds of privileges in the concentration camp. They used to have milk every day and ate white bread and butter, patients' diet, which the sick never saw. For her good work, Kogan was released half a year early, after 65 years. In this way, the Czechists buy themselves lackeys, and, being killers, make use of the services of former killers, and are inseparable friends with them.